Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. I'm going to introduce someone who most of you only know from the internet at Theology Online and only by his avatar and his screen name, which is Turbo. But Turbo is from Detroit, and his name is Tom. Tom, welcome to Bob Inyart Live.
Hi, Bob. Thanks so much for having me. This is an honor.
It's a thrill to have you in studio. I have enjoyed reading your post on the TOL forums for years, Tom. And today, our challenge, your challenge, if you choose to accept it, is this. In the next 30 minutes, we are tasked with presenting more common sense and wisdom about the Casey Anthony murder trial than has appeared in the last 3 years on all broadcast TV and radio.
All right.
That's the challenge. So Casey Anthony was now acquitted of the murder and homicide charges.
Right.
We need to talk through that first. Should she have been acquitted? Should she have been convicted? Is she guilty? And what do we learn from this about the criminal justice system? So for starters, is she innocent or is she guilty in reality? Not whether or not she could be convicted, but in reality, is she innocent or guilty?
I think the evidence is pretty strong against her innocence.
Yeah, I think that many who say that they approve of her being acquitted believe that she was guilty, that she murdered her little girl.
I'm not sure why people would want someone who's guilty to be acquitted.
Many, 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 many people. It seems that in our country, the whole country could know that someone is a murderer, a cold-blooded murderer, and that person could be acquitted. And you have many people, even millions, approving of the acquittal and saying, well, see, that shows the system works.
Is that because our system has a threshold of guilt that's beyond a reasonable doubt?
Well, I think that that is a bad threshold.
I do, too. What should it be?
Well, in the Bible, in God's word, the threshold for a conviction is reasonable evidence, two or three pieces of reasonable evidence, and that could be eyewitnesses or physical evidence or even circumstantial evidence, two or three pieces of reasonable evidence that somebody murdered someone, like with O.J. Simpson. So what we have here, we have so much extraordinary evidence that Casey Anthony murdered her daughter. For starters, her daughter was missing, and she didn't report her missing for 31 days. That's for starters.
Right. That's very strange behavior.
Yeah, and I'd say it goes beyond strange. And also, you know, what defense attorneys do, we have people who make millions of dollars by getting a rapist or a murderer to get acquitted, to get away with the crime. And so that's tragic. We shouldn't have that kind of a profession where if you help a murderer get away with the crime, you get wealthy. That's a bad job description right there. But what defense attorneys will do, they will make up lies. They fabricate tall tales, yarns, and they try to cover all of the particulars. And if they could make up a tall enough tale and cover enough of the particulars, then they get paid, or they're very wealthy, they're sharp, they know how to lie. And they manipulate jurors into confusion, and the jurors end up acquitting people who are obvious murderers.
So what should we do if we were reforming the system? What would we do with lawyers? What if we made them accountable?
Well,
if their client is guilty and they're defending them, would they
for one, I don't think that the government should recognize a lawyer as any special kind of position or ability. A lawyer is someone skilled at the circumvention of the law. That's what a lawyer is. You need lawyers when the law has been turned into a weapon against the innocent. That's when you need lawyers. In this case, Kaylee Anthony is the innocent victim, and the law has been turned into a weapon against the innocent in helping a murderer, her murderer, go free. So if I were king, I wouldn't recognize lawyers as any special standing in court. I think the whole system is perverse. Lawyers say incessantly that we have the best system in the world. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I've heard that very often.
What do you think? What are your thoughts when you hear a lawyer saying we have the best system in the world?
Well, I've heard you say that that's code for we have the highest paid lawyers in the world.
Well, yeah. We have the highest paid lawyers in the world. And if we want to know if we have the best system in the world, one way is to look at the output. You're an engineer, right?
Right.
You look at the results.
Yeah.
To see if you have a good system. You're from Detroit. If there's a good engine, then it's going to perform well. If you say you have the best engine in the world and it gets lousy gas mileage and it doesn't have much push, much oomph to it, much power, well then you got a lousy engine.
Or you could look at the number of defects. And I think in a criminal justice system, a crime could be looked at as a defect. And our crime rate, if we've got the best system,
we should have the lowest.
Right.
We should have the lowest violent crime rate in the world. We should have the lowest sexual assault rate in the world. We should have a very low incarceration rate, because if you have a good criminal justice system, that would mean that you have relatively very little crime. But we have, and especially if you exclude war zones,
right,
where people are just killing one another randomly, people you don't know, you just point the gun, kill somebody, and you don't get in trouble because it's a war. If you exclude war zones, we have one of the highest murder rates in the world, sexual assaults, and last I checked, the numbers vary pretty quickly over time, but we had about 2 million Americans incarcerated at any given moment just a couple years ago, last time I checked. 2 million. So we have the highest incarceration rate in the free world, and we have some of the highest murder, violent crime, and rape, sexual assault rates in the world. I'd say that means we have one of the worst systems in the world, not one of the best.
Isn't it the case where, you know, perjury is supposed to be illegal, even though it's rarely enforced?
Right. Rarely is someone charged with perjury.
And if you're covering up for someone who's committed a crime, you're considered an accessory after the fact, except for if you're a lawyer. Then you're allowed to lie.
If you're a lawyer, they lie and they distort. They do everything they can. If they know that their client is a murderer or a rapist or a kidnapper, they do everything they can do to try to get that person acquitted. Casey Anthony's case, her daughter is dead, and the mother says she went missing, but the mother didn't report her daughter missing for 31 days. Even then, it wouldn't have happened if the grandmother hadn't been going hysterical.
Right.
And it turns out that the mother is doing searches on her computer, Casey Anthony, for
chloroform and neck breaking,
ways to kill a child. And then the mother lies about it, commits perjury, because the mother doesn't want her daughter to get the death penalty. So even with all the dysfunctionality in that family and all the anger and the hurt going in every direction, from father to mother to brother to sister to granddaughter being murdered, even with all that, the mother doesn't want to see her daughter put to death. So the mother lies, commits perjury in a capital case,
right,
and says she did all those searches. Right. Yeah. Grandmas always do searches like that. And the testimony was from her employer that she was at work during the times of those searches. So Casey Anthony did the searches, and the mother was lying.
Right. And what should the penalty be for lying in a capital case to cover up for the guilty party?
Well, in any trial, the Bible says if you commit perjury, the penalty should be whatever the penalty is at stake in that trial. Let's say somebody has to pay restitution, $1,000, and you lie to try to get your friend acquitted, then you also have to pay restitution, $1,000. If it's a capital crime, the penalty would be the death penalty, which would then deter even most mothers from lying to help their daughters get away with murder.
Right.
Not only does Casey Anthony not report her daughter missing for 31 days, but it turns out during that time she's partying. She's having a great time.
Yeah.
And if you had a daughter, they fabricated this tall tale, this lie, first that Casey was raped by her father and her brother, then that Kaylee drowned in the pool when there was no evidence of that. And if your daughter dies a horrific death, an accident, you don't, for one thing, for the father to turn it and make it look like a crime, a murder had occurred. I mean, that's bizarre. Talk about a tall tale. That's one of the tallest. But then you would be mourning and grieving for weeks or months on end. You have children. We have children. One of your kids dies accidentally. I mean, it's the world comes crashing down on your head.
Right. And the last thing you would want to do is, even if you were afraid that you might be found to be negligent, if, you know, if she drowned in a pool, you'd think, because it's such a tragedy and you'd be mourning, you'd want to come clean. You wouldn't want to compound your guilt, even if it were a case of negligence. You wouldn't want to compound that by hiding it and, you know, trying to cover it up for months on end.
Well, right, and not reporting it. Like, for example, the JonBenet Ramsey murder trial, John and Patsy Ramsey. JonBenet is dead, and so they arrange the crime scene to make it look like there was an intruder. And as soon as they've done that, then they call the police, of course.
Yeah.
They're not going to wait weeks or a month or who knows, months without reporting, because every hour that goes by, you look more guilty, because unless you're covering up your own guilt, you would want help to find your daughter.
Right.
And if you stage the crime scene and then you're not going to report it for a month, obviously you're putting all the attention on your family, not only for an accidental death or drowning, but for murder. So that story is not plausible. It's not in the realm of reality.
Yeah. It'd be like if there were an accidental death and you're going to go out of your way to make it look like a murder instead.
And to make it look like a murder, and the prime suspects will be your family. And then by not reporting this for a month, you make it look like your own daughter, who you're supposedly trying to save from being accused of being a bad mother, you make it look like she's a murderer. I mean, the whole thing is bizarre. So the vast majority of people who approve of the ruling by the jury, the verdict, the vast majority of those people think that she murdered her daughter. And so we've reached a time in America where a capital trial is an exercise in showing how big we all are, where we could approve of the outcome of where somebody murders their child and they get acquitted, and that doesn't make us upset. That just shows we have the best system in the world.
Yeah. I don't know by what measure that could be considered a success if the guilty go free.
Right.
Except if you're lifting up this beyond a reasonable doubt standard as if that's the most important thing.
Yeah, the standard is bad because it's a standard based on a negative. And high-priced defense attorneys could drive Mack trucks through standards based on a negative. It's hard to prove a negative. And when you focus on the negative, beyond a reasonable doubt, the main example I've given for years is the O.J. Simpson case. The 911 operator, she gets a call from O.J. Simpson's wife, and she dispatches the police immediately and says there's a man beating up his wife. It's a domestic violence. And all she heard was she heard slaps in the background. She heard the blows.
Right.
On Nicole Brown Simpson, she heard the blows. So she was right in what she heard, but Johnny Cochran gets her on the witness stand, cross-examines her, and makes her sound like a buffoon, like a fool, like she could never possibly know what it was she heard, even though I think he pled no contest that time. I mean, the whole world knows he beat up his wife. In that instance, the cops got there, and he's beating up his wife. And they say, isn't there a reasonable doubt that what you heard could have been like somebody slamming a phone book on a piano?
Yeah.
And she said, well, I guess so. And so that is an example of the confusion that could be introduced to the jury when you're not focusing on reasonable evidence, you're focusing on reasonable doubt. A 911 call, and the woman is in tears, and she's afraid of a man, and you hear blows, and you deduce they're probably a guy beating her up.
Right. I mean, people used to tell stories that way on radio dramas. You'd be able to follow a story based on listening to what you're...
Right, right.
You wouldn't be sitting there wondering, is someone getting beat up right now, or is someone slapping a phone book around?
Right, not at all. So we've had this standard for a couple centuries now, and I think it goes back to Russia and elsewhere in Europe, where it's better to acquit 100 guilty suspects than to falsely convict one innocent person. That is a bad metric. That's a bad goal. That's a really bad goal. Because, well, first of all, convicting the innocent and acquitting the guilty, what does the Bible say about that?
They're equally an abomination.
They're equally an abomination. So if you have a murderer rapist and you acquit him, well, you give him the opportunity to murder and rape again, and you encourage others to become murderer rapists.
Right. So you might have, if you're overly concerned with not wrongly executing someone accidentally,
right,
you're going to result in a higher murder rate.
Yeah, you're going to result, the result will be killing more innocent people.
Right.
You will have more innocent bloodshed, more women victimized, and so on, more children kidnapped. You'll have more of that if you skew the errors in favor of acquitting the guilty.
And from the judge's standpoint, it's if he's going to wrongly convict someone unintentionally, he didn't do anything negligent, that's not a sin. Whereas if you intentionally let someone that you know is guilty, but you know you have some artificial standard that you're trying to meet, if you're
right,
willfully, with this standard, letting 100 guilty people...
Grossly negligently letting the guilty be acquitted so you could be proud of how fair your system is.
Right.
Then not only have you come to the wrong conclusion, but there's culpability in it, there's sin in it. So let's say you have a good system and there have been 1,000 trials, and we're human beings, so we make mistakes all the time.
Yeah.
So, and these are high stakes. So let's say out of 1,000 trials, you have 20 where the wrong conclusion came to pass.
2%.
Okay, 2%. And you've got 10 where they were innocent and found guilty, and 10 where they were guilty and acquitted. Well, it's tragic if you have 2% of error. That's tragic. You want to get it closer to less than 1 towards 0. But if it's skewed 50-50, half on each side, I think that's evidence that your criminal justice system is being designed properly. Whereas if you say, we're going to design the system so that whenever we make a mistake, almost always, we're going to acquit the guilty. So your goal before you start is, well, if we're going to have 20 false verdicts, we want them to be 20 acquittals of guilty people.
I think what would happen in that case is that you'd get more false verdicts.
You get
more than 20.
You will multiply. That's exactly right. You will multiply the amount of crime being committed because you give this sense of security to criminals that they can get away with a lot of crime.
So next year you'll have 10,000 to deal with instead of 1.
And that's closer to reality of what our situation is in America. So the criminal thinks, you know what? I could probably get away with this. I can have my life the way I want it, and I could kill my daughter, who is a drag on my life and the lifestyle I want to live. I can kill her and probably get away with it. Look, OJ did it. A lot of people do it. And so what happens is you end up with more crime and more false convictions. And even those 20 that you falsely acquitted, well, then, like OJ, OJ's back in jail because he's still a criminal. And you end up with murderers committing more crime and rapists and people who beat up their wives. And they just do it more. The recidivism rate is through the roof. The system is a failure. It is a failure. It's not the greatest system in the world. It's one of the worst, and it's not working. Our epidemic crime rate is proof that it is a failure.
Definitely. Whether or not we can fix the system, we need to know how the system could be fixed to at least teach people, so we don't go around reinforcing the bad system, saying that it's the greatest system in the world, but to teach people how it should be.
Yeah, so you have Casey Anthony, who she murders her daughter. That should be obvious to everyone. Who there are two kinds of people who approve of this acquittal. The one kind is just in rebellion against God, and they like it when justice is thwarted. They just like it for perverse reason.
Or they might be kidding themselves into thinking maybe she really didn't do it.
Well, yeah, okay. All right.
Okay.
There are three kinds of people in the world, people who can count and people who can't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there are some people who think she didn't do it.
Right.
And they're just drinking their own Kool-Aid.
Yeah, or not paying attention.
But I bet you a good percentage of the people who watched the trial think she didn't do it. I bet.
Sure.
And I would lump them into the way you get to that point, like people who thought OJ didn't do it and others, is that you're in rebellion against God personally in your own life, and you tend to come to the wrong conclusion on moral issues. That's just your tendency.
Yeah.
So I would lump that group in with the group that even they think she did it, but they're glad she's acquitted because, see, the system works when we acquit murderers. And I'd say that's because they're in rebellion against God, that group. But then I think there's another that are not necessarily, you know, openly in rebellion against God and justice, but they're part of the criminal justice system, or for some reason they've been seduced to defend the system, and they just can't get themselves to acknowledge the horrendous failures that are a routine. If we have horrendous routine failures, then what they've been saying for 25 years is not true, that we have the best system in the world.
Would you say that's a form of idolatry?
I would, you know what? That's a good question, because if you honor God above all else, you're not going to approve of the system that acquits murderers.
Right. They're putting our man-made system above
justice. God's criminal justice system.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, did you want to talk about a caller that we got before the show from Julie?
That's right. Julie called in and didn't want to go on the air. She's from Denver Bible Church, and she was called for jury duty in Aurora, Colorado, last week. She never made it onto the pool. She never even had to answer any questions. But the prosecutor asked this question. He said, if the government passed a law that you cannot drive a black car on Sunday, and you thought it was a bad law, would you still do your job as a juror and convict if we had the evidence that this person broke that law? And most of the people said, well, yeah, I'd follow the law. But Julie said, one guy said, no, I would not, because it's an unjust law. I would not convict. So that guy is the lone hero in the jury pool. He's the lone hero. And his answer, I think, was, of course, good. Our court system wants people to uphold laws that they know are unjust, because it's no longer a justice system. Now it's just a system, and it puts itself in the place of God. They put themselves in the place of God's law. They think their laws are higher than God's laws. So you can convict someone, punish them, put them in jail for doing something that's not even wrong, just to prove that you're greater than God.
It reminds me of when you hear people say that you can't legislate morality. And in some ways that's true, because we can't
You can't legislate somebody's heart.
Yeah, you can't change the way they think, although good laws do go towards teaching people right from wrong.
Oh, yeah, and most law is morality. Like,
right.
Don't steal, don't kidnap, don't murder. Those are all moral commands.
But when you take that idea that you can't legislate morality and act as though, well, people are going to commit murder anyway, so it doesn't matter. And then we have laws like the driving a black car on Sunday.
Right.
And pretty soon the law just turns into a set of rules as if it's a sport. Mm-hmm. And they're all just arbitrary.
Tom, when I have been called for jury duty, I've wanted so badly to be on the jury, but they always get rid of me right away. I've been on the air in Denver for 20 years. And also, some of my views are known by the prosecutors, so that they don't want me on the jury. But I would answer, that guy's answer was perfect. Second best answer, I would say, sure, I would convict. And they'd say, well, what do you mean? You know, we've heard your show. What do you mean you would convict if you think it's an unjust law? And I'd say, what better way to show the public that our criminal justice system is utterly corrupt, that you are a corrupt prosecutor, that the legislature and the judges are all corrupt? What better way than to convict an innocent person? Sure, I'd convict him. That wouldn't be the best answer, but maybe that's the second best.
Or if they just believed you, then you might sneak onto the jury.
Yeah.
But then you'd have an out if they call you.
Right.
Call you out.
Yeah. Tom, thank you for coming out to Denver to visit. It's been such a joy having you out here for the July 4th weekend.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's been 4 years since I've been out here. Hopefully it won't be so long next time.
I hope not. Please come back soon. Visit us from Detroit. So we had a half hour. We gave ourselves a half hour to say more common sense, truth, and wisdom about the Casey Anthony trial than anything that's been uttered on all of radio and TV in the last 3 years. To find out if we did it, we'll have to ask God when we see him in person. But I think we did okay.
How much time do we have left?
10 seconds.
Give the three strongest pieces of evidence against her.
Against her? She says her child is missing for 30 days, doesn't report it. She's lying to the police who are supposed to help find her child, and she's partying.
Yeah.
This is sufficient.
And there's also physical evidence.
The physical evidence, a dead body in her trunk. She's buried with artifacts from the house and so on.
Right.
Thank you, Tom. God bless you.
Thank you.